Welcome to Pack Talk Podcast, episode 96. Today we're talking about how to train your dog. We're going to be diving into detail on training progressions, the training progression that we use here at Canine Revolution Dog Training. And this is going to be another lecture style podcast. So this is going to be optimized for video format on our YouTube channel, both the Pack Talk Podcast YouTube channel and the Canine Revolution Dog Training YouTube channel. So we'll have the slideshow up on that video for you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed the last one we did. And of course, if you're listening to the audio version, still going to get the full details there. But if you want to see the slides, then you can hop on over to the YouTube channels to check those out. Okay. As always, we appreciate feedback, but let's go ahead and jump right into it. All right. So slide number two, we just want to talk about the goals. What are the goals here that we want to learn and develop today? First of all, we want to give you a understanding of training progressions, okay? What is a training progression? A training progression is basically a sequence of events that we're going to follow that helps us achieve our end goal. Now, we're specifically talking about dog training right now, obviously, but we could use training progressions for a variety of things. We could use training progressions for ourselves, right? Especially if we're doing like physical training, right? How are we going to get to our goal lift, for example? We could use training progressions for teaching someone how to drive a car, right? If you're a parent, one day you're going to have to teach your kids how to drive a car. You're probably going to need to develop a training progression of how to get your child who's never driven a car before comfortable driving a car, okay? So today we want to have a basic understanding of what training progressions are. We want to give you the training progression that we use here in dog training at Canine Revolution. Okay, and we're going to go through that in detail. We also want to help you begin to develop the skill set of critical thinking. Now, this can be useful in a variety of situations in your life, but dog training specifically. Dog training can be difficult. Every dog is different, right? And that's going to require critical thinking to train the dog to your personal standard. Okay, everybody has different expectations for their dogs. Everybody has different goals for their dogs. So we want to be able to think critically as we're working with our dog, as we're going through our training progression with our dog, and be able to adapt to the dog that's in front of us. It's going to be very important. Some dogs are going to be more easy to handle. Other dogs are going to be more difficult to handle. Some dogs we're going to have to do some more troubleshooting with to help them get to where they need to be at as far as reaching our goals with them. All right. Which brings us to the next point. We want to help you begin to develop troubleshooting skills for problem solving in your dog training. Okay. And again, training progressions can be used for a variety of things in life. So troubleshooting, problem solving, critical thinking, all these things combined are going to help you achieve your goals no matter what you're working a training progression on, okay? And last but not least, we want to remind you to be patient, adapt to the dog that's in front of you, right? Trust in the process, right? Do one thing. Don't jump around to different ideas too rapidly, right? We need to be able to focus and get our dog good repetitions on one thing at a time before we proceed from there, okay? So we're going to go to the next slide now. So again, training progression overview. What is the goal of our training progression, right? So specifically at Canine Revolution Dog Training, the goals of our training progressions are, number one, we want to teach a dog your specific pack structure. And a pack structure is the rules and boundaries of your home specifically, right? So most people don't want their dog jumping in their trash can and pulling trash out, right? So that's going to be a rule, a boundary that the dog does not get to jump into the trash can and pull trash out, okay? Something else most people don't like, they don't like their dogs jumping on their guests, okay? So that would be another rule, another boundary of your home specifically. A lot of people don't like leash pulling, right? That can be annoying. It can hurt your shoulder. It can hurt your arm over time, even your back sometimes. It can knock you over, right? If it's too hard of a leash puller. So these are just some examples of rules and boundaries that you might set up with your dog in your home, which we call your pack structure, right? Because we're mimicking the natural structure of a natural dog pack. So a training progression helps us to teach dogs those rules and boundaries. And the training progression we're going to talk about today is our standard training progression at Canine Revolution, and it will help you accomplish that goal. Another goal of training progressions is to teach a dog self-control and calmness. One of the major problems we see with a lot of dogs today is that, they have anxiety, they have nervousness for whatever reasons. They seem to not be able to control themselves. They can't think clearly. They can't think calmly. So a training progression is going to help instill that in a dog through the process of the training progression. Okay. The next thing, we also want a dog to be able to think for themselves in various situations. We want our dogs to make good decisions, right? And through our training process, through our training progression process, we'll be able to help our dog learn how to think for themselves, learn how to operate in various situations, and make good decisions. Okay, so one example could be, let's say you have a backyard where your neighbor's backyard is right next to you, and your neighbor's dog likes to run up and down the fence barking. You don't want your dog to do that, right? So you teach your dog through a training progression not to do that, and you allow your dog to make good decisions from that training progression, right? And then that will carry on into other behaviors as well. So instead of going into your backyard, running up and down the fence barking, your dog decides to go in the backyard and be calm, okay? And avoid that behavior. All right, the next thing is we want to be able to give a dog obedience training that can be used to help manage the dog and give it reliable behaviors to perform. So obedience training isn't the, you know, end all be all. It's a portion of what we need to accomplish in a training progression. Obedience training can help us. It can help us work our dog mentally when we teach it, also when it's completed. It can also help us manage our dog in certain situations. Here's an example for you. You're living in an apartment complex. You go down to the mail room to check your mail. Maybe you're a person, maybe you're a lady, right? And you live by yourself, you got a dog so that, you know, you feel more protected and you're more aware of things that are around you with your dog. So you take your dog down to the mail room. And when you're getting your mail out of your mailbox, you put your dog into a down stay. Okay, that's going to help you manage your dog while you're getting your mail out. Okay, another example, you're in a neighborhood and you walk out to the street to talk to your neighbor. You have your dog with you. You put your dog in a sit stay while you're talking to your neighbor instead of your dog pulling all over the place on the leash and acting a little bit crazy. Okay, so that's just two examples. That obedience training could be used to help manage the dog and give it reliable behaviors to perform. One more example. You take your dog out to a restaurant because you want to be able to take your dog with you places. The restaurant has a patio, so you bring your dog out to the patio. You put your dog in a down stay while you're eating your meal. When you're done with your meal, you tell your dog come. You tell it to heel. You walk off with a nice loose leash. So, you know, obedience is going to help you be calm in all situations, and your dog too, because you're walking in and out of places with a loose leash, and also have an enjoyable meal where you're able to take your dog with you out to that restaurant patio. Okay, so just some examples there. The last goal of our training progression is to allow healthy integration between dog and owner in your daily life. Okay, so integrating the training in a way that's going to be suitable for you and your dog, meeting both of y'all's basic needs and your goals day in and day out in your daily routines. So a training progression helps us do that with the end goal of our training, okay? All right, so now we're going to proceed to the next slide. Training progression overview, okay? So I've simplified this as much as possible for everybody, all right? But basically 12 steps to our training progression, all right? 12 steps to a Canine Revolution dog training standard training progression. Step number one, we're going to go through all these in detail. I just want to list it out for you to be able to see this. Where are we starting? Where's our end goal? Okay. Step number one is going to be conditioning our verbal markers. That's the first thing you're going to do. Step number two, build engagement and focus. One of the tricky things about a training progression like this one is some of these steps become blended. All right. And as you have more experience with training dogs, you understand how that works. You can see them blend together. But let's say you're taking this information and you're training a dog for the first time, right? It's okay. Play around with things, right? I try to detail some of the things to do and not to do as we proceed here in some of the details. But step number one, step number two, those are going to be pretty blended across the board, right? Step number one, condition your verbal markers. Step number two, build engagement and focus, okay? Step number three, teach leash pressure. This is how to teach your dog to respond properly to the leash, not fight against it, not pull against it, but move with it, okay? Step number four, shape and develop muscle memory for obedience, okay? Everyone thinks they can just start saying things to their dog and their dog understands it. That's not true, okay? Dogs are naturally nonverbal beings, so we need to communicate with them in a way they prefer at first. But I'm a big proponent, a big fan of making sure that dog can respond properly to verbal communication. But we have to teach them that verbal communication. So step number four, we're going to shape and develop muscle memory for obedience. Then that puts us into step number five, which is we're going to take that obedience that we've developed. We're going to then assign a verbal cue or command for that. All right. Step number six, we're going to introduce leash corrections for disobedience. So what do we do when our dog disobeys us? Well, there has to be some form of accountability for that. So first, we're going to introduce leash corrections for that. And then in step number seven, we're going to complete remote collar conditioning and remote collar application so that we can give our dog the freedom they deserve as a dog while ensuring their safety. Okay. Step number eight is long line and light line work, which is basically finalizing your off leash. Step number nine is going to be vehicle and home specific behaviors. There are specific things you might want to do with your dog in regards to your vehicle or your home structure, which is how we're going to tackle that in step number nine. Step number 10, we've got socialization or re-socialization. We've got step number 11, distraction proofing and generalization, which is making sure that no matter where we go, our dog understands to adhere to us and that the rules are the same. And then step number 12 is integration and maintenance of all training that's going to be done in your daily life, okay? All right, so we're going to start diving into these in order, all right? Slide number five. The first step in our training progression is going to be conditioning our verbal markers, okay? So we basically have three verbal markers we're going to use to communicate with our dog very easily. So I'm going to run through those with you. The first verbal marker is the word yes, okay? That is known as a terminal release reward marker, right? So basically, if your dog does something right or does something that you want them to do, you're going to say yes. You're going to back up with a piece of food in your hand, and that's going to entice your dog to start chasing you. And then you're just going to let them chase your hand and have the food out of it, okay? That's the simplest way I can explain that to you, okay? So again, the word yes, you're not going to yell it. You're not going to say it in special tones or anything. You're just going to give it a neutral tone. Your dog does something right. Yes. You say yes. You back up. As you're backing up, you get a piece of food in your hand. You lower your hand down to your dog's shoulder level and allow your dog to come take that food reward from your hand. Now, what that does long term is it teaches your dog that when you say yes, they are allowed to stop whatever they're doing, get up, come to you, and there may be the chance for a food reward, okay? We're not going to be rewarding our dog their entire life, all right? So when we're training, when we're going through this training progression, we are going to be using a lot of food rewards at the beginning of training. We want to reward the dog continuously for doing good repetitions until those repetitions, you know, are very strong in the dog's muscle memory. Once the repetitions of behavior are strong, we're going to back off on the food rewards, okay? So this terminal release marker, yes, we say yes, we back up, we give the dog some food. Once we do that repetitiously, then once we say yes, the dog will start jumping forward as if it was chasing us getting food even if we didn't move. That's how we know when that verbal marker is properly conditioned, okay? Now, with that being said, you know, have some fun with this when you're doing this one. You're just going to take your dog out to your yard area, have it on a leash, okay? And then as you're moving around, what I do for conditioning verbal markers is I'm just waiting for my dog to look at me by any chance, right? As soon as they establish some kind of look in my direction, I just say, yes, back up, grab a piece of food out of my pocket or my bait bag, drop it down to their shoulder level with my hand. They can come up to my hand and take it. The reason why I have the dog on the leash is because that's going to, you know, keep the dog within about 6 feet of me. And if the dog's blowing me off, I can just walk back inside. Okay. So if I'm having a bad session where my dog's just blowing me off the whole time, I'm probably going to just end that session. If I'm having a really good session where my dog's giving me a lot of attention, paying really good attention to me, I'll probably keep that session going. And then I'll end that session before my dog starts getting bored of the session, because you want to end sessions on the best note possible. All right. So again, you'll know that you have the word yes conditioned properly when you say yes and your dog starts moving as if you were moving, but you're not moving. Okay. The second verbal marker that we need to condition is our duration reward marker, and that's the word good. So what that means is if I say good, my dog has done something right, but they're not to jump up like they do with the word yes. When I say good, the dog is supposed to stay where they're at. I will walk to them and deliver a food reward to them. Okay? What this does is it allows us to build up duration of behaviors in our dog as time goes on. Okay? So again, I take my dog out to my training area, usually my backyard. I've got him on a leash. Okay, I've got food rewards in my bait bag or in my pocket. My dog looks at me. I say, good. I step forward. I give them a food reward. Okay? Basic, right? Easy to do. All right? Moving on from there, we have our accountability marker. But before I do that, let me just explain a little bit more in detail what verbal markers are doing for us. Verbal markers are allowing us to pinpoint a moment in time in the dog's brain, okay? And then reward the dog or provide some type of consequence to the dog later, all right? So this becomes super useful as we're getting into our obedience training and things like that, because if my dog sits, I can say yes. That pinpoints that moment in time to the dog. Now the dog gets up, starts moving to me for the food reward, and I can give them a food reward. They know that it was for that sit because I pinpointed that moment in time to them. So that's what verbal markers allow us to do. So we've gone through our two reward markers, our terminal release reward marker, which is the word yes. Remember, when we give that marker to the dog can stop what they're doing. They can get up. They can move to us for a reward. Our duration reward marker is the word good. When we say good, the dog's to stay where they're at, keep doing what they're doing, we will deliver a reward to them. All right? The last marker we'll talk about is the accountability marker, which is the word no, right? When a dog does something incorrectly, we're going to give them the accountability marker. We're just going to say no, okay? We're not going to yell at them. We're not going to scream at them. We're not going to say their name, no. We're not going to do any of those things. We, as the leader, we're going to maintain a calm, confident, relaxed demeanor the whole time. We're simply going to say no, and then we'll move on from there, okay? When we are first teaching our dog accountability, we're just going to simply withhold food from the dog, okay? So when you're teaching this, no, basically, if your dog is wanting some type of food from you and they're doing something you don't want them to do, you're just going to say no and put your hand behind your back, okay? You've got one hand on your leash, okay, because you're out in your training area with your dog on leash. Your dog's, like, excited that they're out there with you, so they start jumping on you. You just say no. Once your dog has all four paws on the ground, you can say good and then give them a piece of food. So that's how we're going to start teaching that word, that marker, to the dog, okay? As we progress on in our training progression, we are then going to introduce leash corrections and step five, like we talked about earlier, and then remote collar conditioning and application in step six, okay? All right, so that is verbal markers. So you need to basically start your training with taking your dog out to your training area, typically going to be your backyard. Work on conditioning these verbal markers, yes, good, and no. And when you're teaching the verbal marker no, when you're conditioning that, you're going to have to wait for opportunities for your dog to do something you don't like so that you can withhold that food from your dog, okay? So you're going to go through these. Once your dog is understanding them properly, conditioned to them properly, for example, with the verbal marker yes, when you say yes, you know your dog is conditioned when they're moving very quickly out of that position they were in or from that behavior they were in, coming to you looking for a food reward, even if you didn't move, even if you didn't give them a food reward. Okay, that's how you know that one's conditioned, right? Good, they're just going to be sitting there like normal. So usually I'm using the word yes as a good gauge for when I'm ready to proceed. All right, next slide, slide number 6. Building engagement and focus is our next step. Remember, this step is probably going to be blended with your conditioning verbal markers, and that's because engagement and focus is building up eye contact on you, basically. All right, and so remember how I condition the verbal markers, yes and good? I'm doing that through eye contact. So that's helping me with my next step already. Just remember, if your dog doesn't want to pay attention to you, it won't want to learn from you. Okay, so that's why we need to establish that engagement. And engagement is building sustained focus on the handler. So again, we build up eye contact. We do that by marking and rewarding our dog, ideally for volunteering eye contact to us. Sometimes we can say the dog's name to entice them to start looking at us. Okay, so that's an option as well. But you don't want to always do that. You want your dog to want to pay attention to you, want to give you eye contact based on, you know, just being around you, doing check-ins with you, things like that. When you go out into your training area and your dog is giving you more eye contact than things going on around you, you know you are ready to proceed to the next step. Okay, so while you're working on your engagement and focus, if you walk out into your training area and your dog is focused on everything else except for you, you're not ready to proceed forward. If you walk out into your training area and your dog is doing more check-ins with you, paying attention to you more than things going on around you, you know you are ready to proceed. So don't rush that, because this is laying a proper foundation for you and your dog. All right? Slide number 7. Our next step is going to be teaching the dog leash pressure. This teaches our dog to follow the leash, not fight the leash. All right, dogs have a natural opposition reflex to pull against the leash. So we got to desensitize that in regards to leash and collar. And we do have a really good YouTube video we built showing you how to do this with two different dogs. We'll have to make sure that gets into the description below on this podcast. That way you can refer to that. And a lot of the things we're talking about in this training progression, we have videos on our YouTube channel. So definitely you could probably go to our YouTube channel. You can type in engagement. You could type in verbal markers in the search bar, and you'll probably find our video on how to do that, giving you the visual in addition to what we're talking about today. But leash pressure, basically we're making sure our dog knows how to follow the leash. So what you do, you take your dog out to your training area. They're on a leash. You move your hand that's holding the leash down to your dog's shoulder level. Once your hand's at your dog's shoulder level, you put very light tension into the dog's leash. That's going to put light tension on your dog's neck. All right? Just enough tension so that your dog is either going to want to move with the leash or fight against the leash. Okay? So initially, what typically will happen is that your dog will pull back a little bit from the leash. You keep that pressure constant, consistent, and then your dog will move with the leash. As soon as your dog takes a step into the leash, where the direction that your leash is, you release all pressure from the leash, you say yes, and you allow your dog to come to you for a food reward. Okay, that's basically the process you're going to follow. Now, with that being said, you're going to need to do repetitions of that. Okay, you're going to need to do repetitions until your dog reliably and easily moves with any pressure that you put on that leash from any angle on their neck, right? So if I pull a little bit on that leash to the side of their body, do they immediately turn and start walking that way, or do they pull the opposite way? If they pull the opposite way, I need to do more repetitions. If I put a little bit of tension, you know, backward in relation to them and they pull forward, I need to do more repetitions. But if I pull on that leash and they turn around and come to me, that means that they know how to move with that leash pressure properly. So we're just making sure the dog reliably and easily moves with leash pressure applied from any angle. Now, here's a troubleshooting step. The most common problem that you could experience with teaching leash pressure is going to be when you're putting pressure on that leash. Maybe you have a nervous dog. Maybe their food drive is not high enough to override some of the nervousness that comes along with teaching this type of stuff. If that's happening, use a food lure. All right, use a food lure if they can't figure it out on their own. So you're going to put a little bit of tension into the leash. If you can tell your dog's not figuring it out, put a little piece of food in your hand, hold that right to their nose, and then gently move your hand in the direction of your leash. As soon as they take a step into the leash, again, release all pressure. Yes, give the food reward to them, okay? That helps in most cases, all right? Now, with that being said, you don't want to do that forever, so you're only going to do that until you can get the dog moving comfortably with just leash tension by itself, okay? So that's your troubleshooting step for the most common scenario. With that being said, you know, we do desensitize leash pressure in regards to the leash and the collar around the dog's neck. We don't want the dog pulling into any collar on their neck. However, with a harness, we don't desensitize leash pressure. Because for the people that are doing specialty training, sport dog training, competition dog training, things like that, we'll use a training harness or a harness on a dog to build up drive, to build up frustration in the dog, to help us meet our goals and that progression specifically, which is differently than what we're talking about today. So we will not desensitize leash pressure in regards to a harness. So if we put a harness on a dog and we put a leash on that harness, we want the dog pulling. We want the dog pulling into that harness. If we put a collar on a dog and we put a leash on that collar, we do not want that dog pulling. We want the dog maintaining a loose leash. All right. Next slide, slide number 8. Now it's time for us to start shaping and developing obedience muscle memory. And I did abbreviate obedience as OB in the slideshow. Okay. So now it's time for us to get our dog comfortable moving into various positions for obedience behaviors. Keep in mind, most obedience behaviors are unnatural for your dog. You know, most dogs in the wild, or a wolf, for example, is not going to come and down when you tell it to lay down next to you, okay? Your dog is not just going to walk next to you when you say heel. Your dog wants to be out in front, okay? So we have to understand that. We have to understand that this is going to take us time to shape and develop these behaviors. Now, shaping is just the creation of behavior. Shaping is just teaching that behavior. Development is making the dog more comfortable with that behavior. So for us, we have a couple of basic behaviors that we're going to do this with. And you can do it with any behavior, depending on what you're trying to teach your dog. Again, training progression, you could create one for anything you need to do with your dog. But in this case, you know, we want the dog to heel, which is walk next to you on your left side for us. Some people teach it on the right side. That's fine. We want our dog to sit. Want our dog to down, want our dog to stay, want our dog to come on command, right? And then we want our dog to spot or place. That's when your dog is generally going to go over to a designated area like a Petcot, lay down and stay there. Those are the basics. So as you're teaching these, remember your dog's a nonverbal creature, a nonverbal being. So we're not going to be saying anything to them other than our verbal markers when they're doing something we like. So when we're teaching the heel position, we have our dog on a leash in our training area. We have a piece of food in our hand. We show our food to our dog's nose, and then we use that food to lure the dog into position on our left side. So you're going to start walking with your dog. As you're doing that, you lure them to your left side. You start walking, rewarding your dog for maintaining position on your left side, okay? And like I said, on our YouTube, we have a lot of detailed videos on how we do that. Also, when you're heeling, turning left, turning right sounds, you know, basic, but it can be more complicated. You're going to have to lure your dog as you turn your body left because they have to adjust to your body with their body. You have to lure your dog when you turn right so they know how to maneuver in those situations. If you start backing up, you have to lure your dog to maintain position next to your left leg. So that's what I mean by shaping and developing the muscle memory. You're just running through repetitions of luring your dog into these positions, into these behaviors as you're going. You're marking and rewarding, right? So as you lure your dog into a heel position, they get there, yes. Then you deliver the food reward, then you do it again, okay? And you're just doing that repetitiously to make them as comfortable as possible. Now, remember I said we're using a lot of food at the beginning of training, and that's true. During this phase right here, we're using a lot of food. So that means we might be reducing our mealtime food so that we have more food available, more calories available during our training, all right? So we don't have an overweight dog. Or it might be taking their mealtime food and using that for our training, okay? The sit behavior, right? You're just going to take a food lure, show it to their nose, lift it more into the air. Your dog should sit pretty easily. Most dogs do, okay? If your dog's struggling to sit, then you got to do some troubleshooting with the lure. You might have to lure at a different angle over their head, okay? You might have to lure and then gently tap their butt to encourage them to move it downward. As soon as that butt touches the ground, yes, reward, okay? The down, this can be more challenging. Some dogs don't want to lay down. The down is a more of a submissive position from a dog. So what you might have to do here for troubleshooting, you know, basically the way you teach this, you have a food lure, you move your dog into a sit position, and then you slowly bring your hand with the food in it down towards the ground, you know, at a slight angle away from your dog to encourage them to lay down and put their elbows on the ground in addition to their butt. But let's say your dog is resisting. They don't want to do that. Troubleshooting step is going to be what we call successive approximation, which is taking that behavior and breaking it up into more baby steps, all right? So instead of, you know, rewarding your dog, marking and rewarding when they get all the way on the ground, you could mark and reward them for going halfway down. Do that for a couple sessions and then three-quarter of the way down. Do that for a couple sessions and then all the way down, okay? So that's called successive approximation. You might have to do that at different times, but the down is typically one of those things where some dogs will get it pretty quick, some dogs are going to fight you on it, and that's going to be your troubleshooting step. Take it slow, successively approximate that behavior. All right, the stay command, right? The stay behavior, that's just going to be duration, distance, distraction, okay? We've done other podcasts that detail these behaviors, right? So I'll refer you to those for the details on how to do that. But do understand we need to accomplish duration with the dog, then distance from the dog, then distraction with other things going on around us, all right? Come command, basically what I do is I'll start luring my dog toward me. I'll stop and I'll bring the lure right up to my belly button. That should encourage the dog to sit right in front of me. Then I can say yes and allow them to have that food reward, okay? Spot and place commands, right? That's going to be taking your dog to a designated area. We prefer Petcots for this. So the reason why we like the Petcots is because they're elevated. It provides a very black and white boundary when you're teaching this to a dog, okay? I also like having my down stay completed before I move to the spot or the place command. But basically when I'm ready for that, I'll take my dog in vicinity of a Petcot and I'll start just tossing food rewards on it just to encourage my dog to check it out. Some dogs are a little bit nervous to step on a Petcot. It moves a little bit, it gives a little bit when they put their weight on it. So some dogs are nervous about that. Some dogs are a little bit, you know, shy about that kind of stuff or anxious about it. So again, I'm just throwing some food rewards on it so they get comfortable getting on it, getting off of it. I will also lure them onto it. And once I see that the dog is comfortably moving on and off of that Petcot, then I'll start luring them on it and then luring them down, because at that point, their muscle memory for the down is going to be very comfortable, okay? So those are the basics of how we do that, okay? If you can free shape behaviors, do that. What free shaping is you just mark and reward your dog for offering behaviors to you. So let's say you go out to your yard, you've got your dog on a leash, maybe not even on a leash, maybe you're not even planning on doing training. All of a sudden your dog starts laying down. I could say yes, deliver a food reward for that. I could say good, you know, mark the behavior, deliver a food reward for that. So if you can free shape things, do it, because that's a great way to get some training in, all right? Once your dog is comfortable with each position, they should be moving fluidly in and out of every position. So heeling, once you start luring for that, they should be luring very easily, no resistance, no problems. Sit, they're moving there very rapidly. Down, they're laying down, they're getting back up. They're laying down, getting back up as you're luring. stay, same thing. Come, command, same thing. Spot, place, same thing. So once you have them fluidly moving in and out of each position without any issues, now you know that you're ready to proceed to the next step, which is going to be on slide number 9. Now we're going to put our obedience on cue or command. So this is simply pairing the obedience muscle memory to the cue or command that you desire. You know, some people are into using German words. You know, some people are into using, you know, crazy words or whatever. Honestly, the verbal communication doesn't matter to a dog. They're just simply creatures of conditioning, right? So you can condition them the German words if you want. You can condition them to, you know, whatever language you want. But for me, it's just going to be easiest to use English because that's what I speak with. And, you know, I'm bad enough at it as is. So I don't want to make communication more complicated, right? So all you're going to do for this, right before you lure what you've been luring, that muscle memory, you're going to give the command that you want. So down, for example, you're going to say down. After you say that word, you're going to grab a food reward out of your bait bag, put it in your hand, lure your dog into a down position just like you've been doing all the way up to this point. As soon as your dog does that full down, you're going to mark that yes, right? Allow them to have a food reward, okay? Or you could say good, give them the food reward, but remember, if you're doing that, they got to stay where they're at in that case, okay? So just keep that in mind, okay? But that's basically your process. You're going to give the command. You're going to lure that muscle memory that you've already been doing for that obedience position. And then as soon as that's accomplished, you're going to mark and reward, all right? You're going to do that for every obedience command you've done. Now, as your dog begins to initiate movement when you say the word down, if your dog starts moving down without you moving at all, you know it's time to start fading away from your food lures. You know it's time to start reducing the amount of food that you're using in training. Okay? So that's kind of what you're testing as you're conditioning these words. You say down. If your dog starts moving down, you're like, all right, good to go. We're going to start fading the lures. We're going to start fading the food out, which means we're going to use less of it. Okay? So instead of rewarding them all the time, I might reward them every 3 repetitions, every 2 repetitions. You're just going to do it as you see fit. Okay? You will know you are ready to proceed to the next step when your dog moves into each obedience behavior when they hear that cue or command. So down, for example, when you say down, your dog moves into a down very easily when they hear that word. They're not fighting you. They're not giving you a hard time. If it's not that easy for them to do, if they're struggling a little bit, that means you need to do more repetitions of that behavior. Okay? All right, next slide, slide number 10. We're going to introduce leash corrections. It's now time to teach our dog about accountability, okay? So in the beginning, we're going to start this process when a dog fails to perform obedience. So like let's say now we've asked them to down and they haven't downed. We're going to first say no, and we're going to apply very light leash pressure or leash tension on the leash until the behavior is performed. Remember, we've done our leash pressure work already, so our dog knows to move with the leash. So now we apply this tension in this context. This helps us teach the dog accountability. As soon as they perform that behavior, we're going to say good, mark with the word good. We're going to release the leash pressure and tension, and then we're going to reward them randomly. Okay? So for example, I'm walking with my dog. I tell my dog to down. I say, dog, down. My dog decides to not down for whatever reason. I say no. I put a little bit of tension on the leash downward, you know, signaling them to move downward. When my dog moves downward, I release the tension. I say good. Then I give him a food reward randomly. Okay? That's going to be how we introduce the leash corrections to your dog. You're going to want to do that for several sessions and make sure your dog's responding to that properly. Okay? Once your dog responds to your light leash pressure and tension properly, now it's time to teach your dog a standard leash correction. This is just a pop and release of the leash, kind of like you're popping a towel. You're just going to quick pop and release of the leash just to put a little bit of tension on that dog's neck and basically break their mindset from disobedience and bring them back to obeying you. Okay? So again, the process for this, when the dog fails to perform what you've asked them to do, like let's say it's a down, for example, instead of pulling on the leash and putting light tension on that, you're going to say no, pop and release of the leash. When your dog lays down, good, reward them, okay, randomly. The force behind the pop and release, the force behind your leash correction is going to depend on your dog. Don't apply unnecessary force. I've seen a lot of people overcorrect their dogs. We need to try not to do that, okay? We also don't want to apply too little of force on that correction. You don't want to undercorrect your dog. So you're going to have to vary the level of your correction based on how your dog's responding to that, okay? Only use enough force needed to correct the disobedient behavior, which is what we call an effective correction, okay? So you're going to want to do repetitions of this until your dog is very clearly understanding what to do when you give them a leash correction, okay? Once you accomplish that and your dog is comfortable with them, then you're going to need to move to the next step. Slide number 11, remote collar conditioning and application. All right, remote collar conditioning, that process is going to give the dog a clear understanding about the remote collar. Now, we did do a podcast, episode number 75. That's going to give you more details and insights specifically on the tool of the remote collar. But basically, your remote collar, when trained properly, is going to give your dog the freedom to be a dog while ensuring their safety. Okay, so we have basically two main steps with the remote collar. The second step is going to have a couple of sub-steps. First thing we want to do when we start remote collar conditioning, we want to get the remote collar that we're getting for our dog. We do recommend Dogtra remote collars as their quality remote collars. You don't want to get a cheap remote collar because that one could be designed improperly. Get you a quality remote collar like Dogtra. You're going to put that on your dog, and you're just going to have them wear it, you know, day in and day out for a couple days. Now, at nighttime and when you're not home, take that remote collar off. But when you are home, just put it on them. The contact point should be on the side of their neck where the meat of their neck is, and just have them wear it around for a couple days. The reason why we do that, we want our dog to be desensitized to the new collar, desensitized to the weight of that new collar. So it's similar to us wearing a watch, for example, or some other thing you like to wear, like a necklace or a bracelet or whatever. After you wear it every day for a certain period of time, your body becomes used to it and feels like it's not there anymore. So that's what we want with the remote collar with our dog. That brings us to our step number two, which has our sub-steps. This is how we're actually going to do the conditioning process. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to find the lowest level that the dog can feel on the remote collar. The way we do that is we take our dog out to our training area. We ask them to sit. We start at level one on the remote collar, and we just tap the nick button. Okay, there's a couple features on your remote collar. You have a nick button. If you're getting a quality collar, you have a nick button, a continuous button, which we will push and release real quick. That's what we call the bump. You have a vibrate feature that we don't use. Those are your basics, okay? So you take your dog out to your training area, you put him in a sit, and you simply just tap and release the nick button at level one. And you're just going to go up in your levels, level one, level two, level three, etc., until you tap that nick button, and you can tell that your dog feels something they've never felt before. Most dogs will just generally look down on the ground. They'll seem a little bit confused at the feeling of that. And once you see that, then you know that you've found the lowest level that your dog can feel. Now, the way a remote collar works, it works like a TENS unit, so it's not going to cause any, you know, shock, nothing like that to your dog. It's just going to be a little bit of a stimulation like a TENS unit does, and it's just something your dog's never felt before. If you've never felt a TENS unit before, it'd be the same thing for you in your human language, okay? Once you find that lowest level, now you have four main items you're going to do, okay? And that's going to be for each behavior, so I'm just going to go through the recall first. Number one, you're going to recall with the nick stimulation. So we're basically trying to classically condition our dog that when they feel the stimulation, they're going to start coming to us. So what you do is you tap the nick button. As soon as you do that, you're going to say, come. And your dog should just start walking over to you. And as soon as they do that, you can say yes and then give them a food reward. As with any of our training sessions up to this point, my dog's on a leash in our training area. Okay, so all I do for number one, I just tap the nick button. As soon as I do that, I say come. Once my dog starts coming over to me, I say yes, deliver a food reward. Once I'm comfortable that my dog understands that sensation properly by moving to me, then I'll move to the next step here, which is number two. Number two, I'm going to do a recall with multiple nick stimulation. So all I'm going to do now, I'm going to tap, tap, tap on that nick button. As soon as I do that, come. As soon as they start moving to me, then I'm going to say yes, right? Mark yes, and then give them a food reward, okay? So same thing we did before. Now we're just doing tap, tap, tap on the nick button instead of one nick, okay? Once my dog's moving comfortably with that, I go to the next item, number three, recall with the bump stimulation. The bump is a push and release of the continuous button. So now I'm just going to push and release that continuous button. As soon as I do that, I'm going to bump the continuous button. As soon as I do that, I'm going to say come. As soon as my dog comes, I just mark yes and then give my dog a food reward, okay? So I'm going to be doing that repetitiously. And in the between these repetitions, after I say yes and give my dog a food reward, I'm basically letting my dog walk around, sniff things like that, resetting for another repetition, okay? Then the last piece here, number four, I'm going to recall with the continuous stimulation. This one's the only one that's a little bit different. So in this case, I'm going to push and hold continuous, push and hold. While I'm holding it down, I'm going to say come. As soon as my dog turns and starts coming to me, I let go of the continuous, mark yes, give him a food reward, okay? What that does, this conditioning process with this behavior, it's teaching your dog what to do with these sensations of the remote collar, okay? That continuous is going to one day be your emergency button, right? If something goes wrong, if your dog's not listening to you, it's running away from you, you want to be able to push and hold that and your dog start moving to you. So this is laying the foundation for that. So those are the steps to conditioning the remote collar with the come command. Once you have that accomplished, you're going to do the same thing with the sit and down behaviors. So you're just going to repeat step 1 through 4 with the sit, then repeat step 1 through 4 with the down behaviors. All right. Once you do all that, your dog's understanding it very clearly, moving very clearly. At that point, you're ready to proceed on to remote collar application. With that being said, troubleshooting for this type of scenario. If your dog's struggling with this, if your dog seems like it's not being less confused, go back, take a break for a couple days, go back, find the lowest level that your dog can feel on the remote collar again, and then start the whole process over again. Okay, more repetitions is going to be your friend. Okay, some dogs become sensitized to the remote collar, which means after you use it for a couple of sessions, your dog, that stimulation level that it could first feel might be too high now. So you got to turn it down. That's why there's a stimulation control knob on your remote collar so you can adjust that level up or down depending on how your dog's responding to it. Okay. All right. Now that we're done with the conditioning process, it's time to apply the remote collar to all areas of our training and integrate it into our daily routines. So you're basically going to be using the remote collar for any corrections you need to give in a certain sequence. And this sequence is very important because this sequence teaches your dog that the remote collar is equal to a leash. And once you have that accomplished, the remote collar becomes your invisible leash, okay, which is what we want. That's going to allow us to give our dog the freedom that they deserve as a dog while ensuring their safety, okay? So your sequence is going to be, you're going to say no, then you're going to bump on the remote collar, then you're going to give a leash correction, all right? So let's say you're walking down the street and your dog pulls on the leash for whatever reason. You say no, bump on the remote collar, tug on the leash. No, bump on the remote collar, tug on the leash. That's your sequence. You're going to adjust your remote collar level up or down, depending on how your dog's responding to that. Let's say you give your dog that sequence of correction, and your dog does not change their behavior at all. They're still pulling away from you. You're going to increase your level. All right? On the opposite end of the spectrum, let's say that correction sequence was too much for your dog, too high for your dog. They're pulling away from you. You complete the sequence, and they move backward very quickly like it was too much. You're going to turn down your level. So you're going to be turning your level up or down depending on how your dog's responding to that correction, okay? You will know your dog is properly trained to the remote collar when they respond to the sensation of the remote collar like it's an invisible leash. So let's say you ask your dog to down, for example, and your dog is not downing, and you say no, you bump, and as soon as you bump, your dog lays down without the leash correction. That's when you know that your dog is properly trained to the remote collar, and you can start using it as a normal correction. And the way you're going to do that is you're just going to say no, bump on the remote collar. You don't have to do a leash correction anymore. Okay? So that is our remote collar conditioning and application process. Take your time with that. Don't rush through that. All right? That's going to be your key in this piece of your training right here. All right, moving on to slide number 12, we're talking about long line and light line work. So this is how we're basically preparing our dog for off-leash training. A long line is a leash that is between 15 to 60 feet long, and our preferred material for this is going to be tubular nylon. You can buy these online, all right? So a long line, that's what it is. And basically what you're going to do, you're going to hook the long line up to your dog, which allows your dog to get further away from you, and you're still going to be running through obedience drills. You're going to ask it down. You're going to ask it to come. Things like that. And if your dog is not doing them as you've asked them to, you're going to say no, bump. And if your dog is confused because now they're at a further distance from you, they're still not performing, you can grab that long line. You can give it a quick tug like it was a leash correction. That way you can solidify in your dog's mind to respond to the remote collar just like they would respond to a leash. So you're going to do that repetitiously until you get comfortable with your dog's response to the remote collar at further distances away from you. Once you complete that, now you need to go to a light line. And a light line is a very thin material, very thin line. It's going to be somewhere between 15 to 30 feet long. And it's set up so that the dog is mostly unaware that it's there. You can tie that directly to your dog's collar using a proper knot. You could also go to your local hardware store. You could get a very light connector that is so light it won't weigh down your dog's collar at all. We basically want the dog to be very unaware of that being there, but still ensuring their safety. For me, 550 parachute cord just typically works very well for this. I can cut it to length that I want. I can tie knots in it wherever I want. And, you know, it's just very reliable for this. Now, with that being said, you're going to do the same thing you did with the long line with this. You're going to take your dog out to do some training stuff or on a walk or whatever. And once your dog is a little bit at a distance from you, you're just going to ask them to do something like a down, a come command, a sit command, whatever. If they're not doing it, you're just going to say no, bump on the remote collar. If they perform that behavior as soon as they get that correction, you know that, you know, that they're understanding of the remote collar. If they aren't performing correctly, if they aren't performing that behavior, you know you got more repetitions to do with the light line to help you make sure that they know in their brain what to do when they feel that stimulation in various situations, okay? So run drills with your dog. You know you're solidifying their response to the remote collar. You're proofing it, okay? Next slide, slide number 13. This is vehicle and home specific behaviors. So you're going to train these to your preferences. I'm just going to tell you some stuff that we do, all right? Vehicle-specific behaviors. Typically, we don't want our dogs pacing back and forth in the vehicle. That can be kind of annoying. It can be distracting. It can be dangerous while you're driving. It can also be anxious behavior for your dog. So we want to build calmness with our dog. We want to build calmness in the vehicle. So what we'll do if our dogs are doing that, we'll have them do a down. We'll have them do a sit, for example, in the car. No factor. You can use your remote collar at this point. So your remote collar could be your invisible leash as you're working on that to help you get corrections in. We don't like our dogs rushing out of car doors. So if we open a car door and they try to just rush out the car, you know, we're not going to allow them to do that. We're going to ask them to down, stay. Then we'll teach them that when we say out, they can get out of the car. Okay. So that's like the basics of the vehicle specific behaviors that we'll teach. Home specific behaviors are going to be very dependent on you and your preferences. But typically for a lot of people, we don't want our dogs jumping on people. We don't want our dogs putting their mouths on people, even if they're not biting someone. We just don't want them practicing putting their mouth on a human. We don't want, you know, trash diving. We don't want counter surfing. We don't want yard digging, etc. So what do? We go through these routines with our dogs. Now that we have the remote collar done, let's say our dog's digging in the yard. We're going to say no, bump on the remote collar. Once our dog stops, we say good, right? And then we can randomly reward them for doing the right thing. That's just an example of how we're going to teach these home behaviors. Same thing with jumping on people. If we have our friends come over, our dog runs up to them, starts jumping on them because they're excited. We say no. We bump on the remote collar. Once our dog puts all four paws on the ground, we say good. We let the dog do what they're doing, okay? We also don't like rushing in or out of exterior doors of the house, like the front door, back door, for example. So we'll teach the dog that there's a door threshold there and that if they approach that door, they have to wait for someone to tell them in or out before they can go through that doorway, okay? So that's just some examples of vehicle and home specific behaviors. Again, we have videos that show you how to do this on our YouTube channel, so you can refer to that for more visuals on those. All right, socialization or re-socialization. Socialization is just giving your dog positive experiences and close proximity to people, places, and things. So basically, you're just going to take your dog out somewhere away from your normal training area or your walking areas, and you're going to perform engagement sessions and eye contact drills with them. You can put them in a down stay, right? You can move around as your dog gives you eye contact. You say good and reward them, or yes and reward them. You take your dog out to like a local park. You know, your dog starts giving you eye contact, so you start marking and rewarding that. Those are just examples of how we're going to do socialization sessions. Interactions with other people and dogs are not required, but you can do those in some cases. Those are just going to be dependent on your dog. You don't want to force your dog into a situation that they're uncomfortable with, right? So if you have a dog that's comfortable with, meeting people and dogs, you can definitely start doing those. Usually what I do is I have a stranger come up, hand my dog some food rewards, right, just for a simple interaction, and that gets my dog used to being calm as strangers are approaching them. Same thing with the home protocols. If my dog's getting too excited, jumping or whatever, I will correct those and make sure my dog knows to keep all four paws on the ground, okay? Meeting with other dogs, interacting with other dogs. Again, make sure your dog's suitable with this. Make sure the other dogs are suitable. But if my dog's being too rough with other dogs, I can use the remote collar to help communicate with them to tune down their play behavior. So if I have a super rough dog and they're being rough on the other dog, I can say no, bump on the remote collar. My dog should start tuning in their behavior, calming down, because we've done everything up to this point in the training progression. That should be very clear to them, right? But if not, I can always tell them to come, give them a quick break, and then let them go play again, okay? Just keep in mind, when you're doing socialization, always remember, never let your dog practice behaviors you don't want them doing long term. So if you don't want your dog jumping on people long term, don't let him practice it. Use your tools to your advantage. Use your training to your advantage. If my dog's jumping on somebody, no, bump. If they're not responding to that properly, I might turn up that level on the remote collar. No, bump again. If they're still not performing properly, you know, dog, come. If they're not coming, no, bump, right? Turn up the level, no, bump. That's kind of the sequence I'm going through until my dog comes to me, and then I can practice him being calm, right, with people. So that's just one example, okay? And we do have examples, visuals of that on the YouTube channel that show dogs playing, how to help that, right? Dogs interacting with people, how to help that, socialization, how to work on that. So we got visuals for all of this on the YouTube channel, right? But this is our game plan right here that we're talking through. All right, next slide, slide number 15. We're doing distraction proofing and generalization work, which is just proofing all of our training in all environments. So we take our dog out to different places like parks, shopping areas, restaurants, stores, etc. We use our training to ensure that our dog understands that no matter where we go or what's going on around us, still give us eye contact, still perform training behaviors, obedience behaviors like we've been doing this whole time, okay? If your dog is struggling with particular distractions, at that point, we're going to need to balance out our thresholds. And a threshold is a distance to distraction. So if your dog struggles being around other dogs, you need to go to places that have some other dogs moving around and just maintain a distance from those dogs. Once your dog can focus on you at that threshold distance that you determine, it could be 10 feet, it could be 50 feet, it literally is just going to depend on the dog. Once that threshold is comfortable and your dog can perform properly, you reduce your threshold. You go from 50 feet to 45 feet, okay? Once your dog can perform good at 45 in relation to that distraction, you reduce your threshold again to 40 feet, you know, just as an example. And again, you might have to regress and progress that threshold as you go through that, all right? Regression is if I'm at 40 feet, my dog's really struggling, I'll go back out to 43 feet. Right? Master it at 43 feet, go back to 40 feet, master it at 40 feet, go to 35 until I can be all the way right next to the distraction that is so distracting to my dog. And again, I'm following fundamental protocols here at this point. If my dog's doing the right thing, I'm going to say good and randomly reward them, you know, because generally at this point in training, I want my dog maintaining their behaviors. So I'm going to say the word good, use that marker for most cases. And then if my dog's doing something wrong or disobeying or outside of a rule or boundary, I'm going to say no, bump on the remote collar, right? I'm going to hold them accountable, and I'm going to adjust my accountability level. I'm going to increase the level on my remote collar or decrease it based on how they're responding to it, okay? When you're going through your distraction proofing and your generalization work, start with low distraction areas like a local park, for example, and then escalate into a higher distraction area like a store or a farmer's market. Don't go straight for that crazy heavy distraction place. Start small, work your way up. This is better for you and your dog because you're building that foundation, okay? Once you get to that high level distraction area, at that point, you're just going into maintenance for all this. And so you're just gonna go where you need to, you know, to maintain those behaviors. Maintain that level of training. All right, slide number 16. Integration and maintenance of all training. So this is when we're going to figure out how can we integrate our training into our daily life. You got your daily walks with your dog. Can you integrate your obedience training on your daily walks? I think you can. You know, if you live in a neighborhood, for example, one exercise I find really useful, every couple driveways that you pass, stop, do a downstay, do a come command, keep walking. That's just one example, okay? We did a whole video of where I demonstrated this again on the YouTube. Had a dog that we had in training, and I took like a daily walk with the dog and showed some examples of how you can incorporate your training in your daily walk. What that does for you as the owner is it just consolidates everything into your walk, which helps you integrate the training into your life easier. All right, you can do your spot work, you can do your place work in the house while you're doing other things, while you're eating dinner, your dog can be on place or spot. While you got Amazon delivering something to your door, you can put your dog on spot or place. Anytime people come in or out of the house, you can put your dog on spot or place as well. You've got your entry-exit protocols. We talked about home protocols, going in and out of those doorways, making sure that's controlled, not letting your dog rush in or out of the door. So you'll tell them when to come in, you'll tell them when to go out. And then regular kennel usage as well. You know, we do want our dogs to maintain that. Kennel usage and comfortability in the kennel. So using it throughout the day or once a day or integrating it into your routines is going to be beneficial for that. All right, maintenance of training. Whatever you practice is going to be maintained. If you don't practice a portion of your training, that training portion could become degraded and, you know, not as easy to work on anymore. But you can often easily reacquire it. You just have to take a couple steps back in your training progression for that specific area and then improve upon it as you go, okay? And that brings us to the end of our discussion on training progressions. So we're going to slide 17, which is our sponsors. But before I do that, I hope you guys found this discussion useful. You know, we've put out this information in other formats, but we're trying to consolidate it in the easiest format for you guys possible. So please leave us a comment. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Again, training progressions can be modified for a variety of reasons. Depending on the dog, depending on your goals, you might not need something this complicated. You know, this isn't really complicated, but you might not need something this robust. But hopefully it gives you an idea of step by step building upon your behaviors to reach that end goal. All right. So let's talk about our sponsors real quick. We got Canine Revolution Dog Training. You can email us at info@caninerevolutiondogtraining.com. Maybe you're listening to this and you're like, hey, that's a lot of work. You know, we are experts in dog training. We've trained, you know, thousands of dogs. Our team has, and we can help you. We can serve you and help you achieve your goals with your dog and knock out the repetitions for you so that you're on the maintenance phase of training instead of having to do all those details to get there. So you can email us, you can call us or text us. Our phone number is 843-213-2676. We've got a pretty large staff. We're ready to serve you and your dog from across the United States. We do board and trains. We do puppy training. We do complimentary in-home consultations. We have lifetime support for you and your dog. We have customized programs, private sessions, group sessions, things like that, okay? And we got you for life. Once you sign up with our team and with one of our programs, we're here to support you and your dog for the life of your dog, okay? We've also got Canine Revolution Apparel as a sponsor. This is on Amazon. You can go on Amazon, type in Canine Revolution Apparel, or click the link below, and you'll find shirts, you'll find hoodies, beanies, mugs, etc. You'll find the Canine Revolution logo on there. You'll find Good to Go on there, so you can be good to go, right? You'll find a variety of things on there as well, all right? Moving on, we are affiliated with Origin USA. You can go to originusa.com, get you some American-sourced materials, American-made goods, all right? Jeans, the most comfortable jeans you'll ever wear. Made in America, sourced in America. The cotton, grown in America, that's used to make those jeans. The rivets on the jeans, the buttons on the jeans, made in America, sourced in America. I mean, 100%, let's go. All right, boots, hoodies, shirts, hunt gear, martial arts, exercise gear, they got it all. Origin USA, use discount code SINGER101 at checkout for Origin USA. All right, now we got Jocko Fuel. Jocko Fuel, you can go to jockofuel.com. American sourced ingredients, American made supplements. Good for you. Taking care of your body. You're going to be able to take better care of your dog, better care of your daily routine if you're taking proper care of your body. All right. They've got Molk protein. They've got pre-workout. They've got clean energy drinks. They've got the greens, right? Get those micronutrients daily. They got creatine, joint support, immunity support, anti-aging support. They got more, right? Go check it out, jockofuel.com. Use discount code CANINEREVOLUTION at checkout for 10% off and support yourself, support America, support the podcast, all right? Our next sponsor, Canine Super Supplements. You can go to caninesupersupplements.com. That's the letter K, the number 9, supersupplements.com. These are American-made supplements for your dog. So Jocko Fuel, that's supporting you. Canine Super Supplements, that's supporting your dog. They've got the joint supplement. They've got the multivitamin supplement. They've got the puppy formula, which you can give to adult dogs as well. They've got the weight gainer. Do you have a hard gainer dog? Dog with a high metabolism? Get the weight gainer. It's going to help them get up to that healthy weight. You can use discount code Canine Revolution at checkout with Canine Super Supplements for 15% off your order. All right. And I've been using these with my own dogs for a while now. Definitely can tell the difference, right? We use them for dogs that we're training as needed. We recommend them for everyone we work with, right? Because this is going to help you with that longevity aspect of your dog, right? Training is an investment into your dog. Supplements are an investment into your dog. We get dogs because we like companions, right? We want to have a companion that's with us as long as possible. Canine Super Supplements helps us achieve that by filling in gaps in our dog's nutrition. All right. Don't forget, visit Pack Talk Podcast on YouTube. Visit Canine Revolution Dog Training on YouTube. a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, we've got individualized videos. So distraction work, you can type in distraction work on our channel. You'll find some videos, you know, leash pressure. You type that into our search bar on our channel. You'll find some videos on that. Okay. Last but not least, our local partners. So we have partners that are local to Somerville and Charleston, where if you're in the area, you can reach out to them, tell them you're with Canine Revolution to get some perks with them. So the first one is Black Force MMA, right? That's mixed martial arts and fitness. They have a gym there as well. You can also listen to episode 71 to hear the owner of Black Force MMA. We've got DT Mobile Detailing, owned by David, former U.S. Marine. All right. Well, don't say that. Don't say that, right? I've said that before to a Marine. They got upset. You don't say former, because once a Marine, always a Marine, right? David, U.S. Marine. All right. He's going to come to your place. He's going to come to your business, wherever you're at. He'll detail your car for you. He'll detail your golf cart, your boat, your RV, whatever toys you got. Okay. Sharpshooter Pressure Wash. That's going to be Josh. He'll come pressure wash your house or anything else you need him to. Sidewalks, chicken coops, etc. All right. The Velazquez Company. The Velazquez Company. That's our friend Antonio. Painting, fencing, things like that. Drywall repair. Hit him up. He's the best in the business. All as well, Somerville. They were on episode 14 of the podcast. That's your holistic dog and cat food, your holistic pet food, pet supplies. Okay. Carolina Premier Home Inspections, owned by Bob, on episode 74 of the podcast. You know, if you're buying a home, buying a townhome, buying an apartment, maybe you're an investor, you want a guy that's going to find anything wrong with the house. If you're a seller, you want a guy that's going to let you know what's going on, right? Under the walls, in the walls, outside the walls, on the roof. He's going to figure it out. He's going to give you advice on what to take action on. Carolina Premier Pest Control, also owned by Bob, who was on episode 74. This is the pest control for your home. Termite control, you know, yard control, mosquito control, things like that. All right. Cane Bay Chiropractic, owned by Dr. Anthony Lanzera, who was on episode 7. Obviously chiropractic, obviously helping you out with your back and nervous system, your spine and nervous system, okay? We've also got Lanzera Defense Strategies, who is on episode 58, also owned by Dr. Lanzera, okay? This is going to be your CWP courses and your defensive pistol courses and your CWP refresher courses, okay? We're also partnered with local Aquafusion IV Hydration, downtown Somerville. This is how you're going to get those nutrients straight to your bloodstream through IV, okay? Then our newest partner, True Carts by McElveen, that's going to be located in the Lowcountry area, you know, getting golf carts that are made in South Carolina from start to finish, right? Fabricated, turnkey, 100% South Carolina American-made golf carts. That's going to be True Carts by McElveen, okay? So those are our local partners. So if you guys are in the Somerville or Charleston, South Carolina area, you can hit these people up. We got links below in our link tree to where you can easily access them, and they're going to give you discounts on services for telling them that you're with Canine Revolution, okay? So thank you for listening. Please give us any feedback that you have on the podcast and the information we're providing. If you're listening on a podcast platform, please rate us, review us. If you're listening to us or watching us on YouTube, please subscribe, leave a comment, give us a thumbs up, let us know how we're doing. And until next time, this is Pack Talk Podcast, out.